Go Loud.
Beetlejuice the musical. You say his name three times, he goes, just imagine the lawyer going, wait, is there anything that's actually a pen here? Well, the way some of those young women were dressed in that show, I don't know.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Few Scoops. We are a comedy news podcast. I am author and journalist Aoife Muir, and my co-host is the funniest man outside of Cork, Colm O'Regan.
I'm outside of Cork. Am I inside of Cork? I'm confused. Yeah.
I assume Cork men are quite funny. Roy Keane's all right, like.
Yeah. Or we have a new hero now with Ben O'Connor. He's our new Roy Keane figure.
Is he?
He's a hurling manager of Cork, and he gives good interview.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
This week, we have the fallout from the Epstein files. We may see some actual consequences for Peter Mandelson, Keir Starmer, Prince Andrew, and all the other men who have formerly not received any consequences for their actions. And the Super Bowl, where we took part in Puerto Rican Central American joy, and then they had a white people Super Bowl halftime show that Colm watched. And our good news is about Dublin, Ireland, and Brenda Fricker. Would you believe that the Epstein files release may lead to some consequences this week? There has been more news this week linked to Epstein than there has been in the last couple of years. But it does appear that Keir Starmer, the current Prime Minister of Great Britain and the North of Ireland, is hanging on by a thread. So the reason that Keir Starmer is in such trouble is because of Peter Mandelson. So we've talked about Peter Mandelson before. He was a bigwig in Labour back in the day, and he was brought back from the cold to be the UK's ambassador to America, despite the fact that it was known that he was good friends with Jeffrey Epstein. And this was already known. It was known that Peter Mandelson was friends with Jeffrey Epstein. And yet we have Cork to thank for it. So Keir Starmer's right-hand man is a Cork man named Morgan McSweeney. And he looks like a Morgan McSweeney as well. He's got red hair.
He does look like he gets to the last four in The Apprentice.
100%. Yeah, real thin sort of fellow as well. Always on the move. Always walking briskly down the street.
Talks into his phone like...
Oh yeah, like he's in like MI5.
Cream.
Yeah. So Morgan McSweeney brought Peter Mandelson back into the fold. Now, one MP got up in the House of Lords this week and said the reason Peter Mandelson was brought back was because he hated Jeremy Corbyn, and Keir Starmer and Morgan McSweeney wanted to fill the cabinet and all the top positions with people who hated Jeremy Corbyn and basically rid the party of left-wing people. They say, however, that that was not the case.
And also, they weren't bringing him back to the cabinet. Like,
no.
Ambassador to the US is not much use to Keir Starmer in the heel of the hunt, though.
But when you think about the fact that Peter Mandelson was friends with Jeffrey Epstein, and who else was friends with Jeffrey Epstein, surely a friend in common with Donald Trump.
Yeah, a bit of small talk. Yeah. It really helps that small talk, that awkward first 20
Here,
seconds.
Have you been over to the island with Jeremy? Jeffrey.
I thought you were accusing me of being over to the island there.
No.
And I had to check for a moment going, no, I didn't, because everybody's been there.
So Morgan McSweeney stood down over the weekend. I don't know if anyone's ever watched The Thick of It, but I very much felt like it was someone said, somebody has to go to keep Keir Starmer in his job. Morgan McSweeney fell on his sword and resigned from the top job in Downing Street. So after Cork's Morgan McSweeney stood down, the head of comms, Tim Allen, also handed in his walking papers. I think blood was in the water then for the Labour Party. So which is quite normal when it comes to the Labour Party. It is always Scottish Labour that fire the starting pistol. They are the conscience of the party. And the head of Scottish Labour, Anna Sarwar, told Keir Starmer to quit.
Do you think that it's always Scottish Labour because at any given decade, once a decade, they're in danger of extinction? Like, do they have a more existential fear when something goes wrong?
And I think, having lived in Scotland for quite a long time, Scottish Labour like to differentiate themselves from English Labour. They want the general branding, but they don't want to be too closely linked in general, because the British Labour Party, like Jeremy Corbyn, was pretty popular in Scotland. You know, like, anyway, they tend, Scottish people generally tend to be a bit more left wing, a bit more working class, a bit more easygoing.
But they want access to the kind of
good, and the money.
Good HR systems and money.
And the money, So Anna Starmer asked Keir Starmer to stand down. He said that the scandal surrounding Keir Starmer and Peter Mandelson had become a distraction, and said, "You are going to hurt my chances of unseating the SNP in the Holyrood elections in May in Scotland." However, Starmer said on Monday night at the Parliamentary Labour Party, "I've won every fight I've ever been in." I find that hard to believe. I would say he got a couple of kickings at school. He said he was not prepared to walk away. And he also was told by some of his lickspittles to get rid of Anna Starmer. They called Anna Starmer a traitor for telling Keir Starmer to stand down.
So as ever, the ongoing blessing for Labour is it's still 2.5 years to the election. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that can save them at this stage is time. So they just have to stay in government and not have any reason for an election.
Yeah, because they're deeply unpopular, I mean, considering some of the laws they've brought in. So fallout from that goes from bad to worse for the British establishment, as support for the British royal family fell to 45%.
Yeah.
Way too high. Way too high. Now, as I always say to people about how to read the news, this survey was commissioned by the anti-monarchy campaign group Republic.
The question was, what do you think of them pricks?
Yeah. So the survey by Republic found that a proportion of British public in favour of the monarchy had dropped 3 percentage points, down from 48 over the last 4 months, down to 45.
Are you in favour of the monarchy is a different question to, do you want to actively abolish the
monarchy? Do you want to keep the monarchy? Yeah. So, again, this is all off the back of the Jeffrey Epstein emails, which have shown that formerly known as, the artist formerly known as Prince Andrew, was close friends with the convicted child predator for a long time after he had been convicted. And his brother, the King, said on Monday that the palace had profound concern about the allegations about Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, and the palace stands ready to support the police if approached. Okay. Because now it turns out Thames Valley Police are assessing suggestions that Prince Andrew shared confidential reports with Jeffrey Epstein when he was a trade envoy for the UK.
Okay.
So he's not only hanging around with Peter Fine, he's also giving him state trade secrets.
And Peter Mandelson is accused of something similar, isn't he? Is he accused of
passing information
about, what was the pivotal, the Greek banking bailout? Isn't that the thing?
Random.
Yeah.
So it is alleged that Peter Mandelson gave Jeffrey Epstein advance notice of the EU bailout for Greece at around 500 billion euro. And he was, obviously, Epstein was a financier, they say.
Yeah.
This would have been information that he could have used.
Like, before, you could have thought it's a party island with child sex abuse on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for people to meet people with, you know, certain
like-minded perversions.
Yes. But as time goes on now, when you see how he's connected to everybody,
it's a blackmail ring.
A blackmail ring, yeah. What do they call it? Compromat.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that Trump, the allegations against Trump is, why is he so pro-Putin, apart from making loads of money, loves gangsters. The other allegation is Putin's got something on him. I still think that people will still vote for him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what level of satanic ritual he'd have to do. It'd be like satanic ritual level 7 before MAGA would be thinking, I don't know, I'm getting a weird feeling about it.
Well, it's the upside down. They believe that left is right and up is down. So there is, as he said himself, he could shoot someone in Fifth Avenue and nobody would.
But the people to watch, of course, are not, you know, World Economic Forum shills like us who clearly want, you know, the liberal agenda to go everywhere. It's people who were formerly close to him. So you talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene as kind of turning on him recently.
So there's the former current Georgia senator who's now left MAGA.
Yeah, and she would have been famous for saying things like Jewish space lasers.
She said that the Jews ran the world with space lasers.
And
really normal lady.
Yeah, and then more recently, Lauren Boebert. Is she the one that was in the cinema with her? Oh, God, it's very hard to tell a linear story in this because it just keeps It's getting sidetracked.
She was removed from Beetlejuice the musical because she was giving someone a handjob.
Beetlejuice the musical. You say his name three times, he goes, ugh!
My man listens to this.
but she has said, I've seen some shit you people wouldn't believe, more
Yeah,
or less,
because they showed Congress some... They showed some people in Congress some of the unredacted Epstein files yesterday.
And from that... People are saying that the stuff that's redacted is not victims.
It's the abusers.
The abusers.
Yeah. So one story I read this morning was a congressman who was leaving and said there's at least six men there who are implicated just by the emails that they have sent. They are talking about trafficking. They are talking about Mossad. They are talking about torture videos. There's instructions from Jeffrey Epstein about how to get your hair cut and what he wants your teeth to look like.
And if you want to experience the kind of... banality of evil, two programmers have made a tool called Jmail, where you can read the emails as if it's a Gmail account. And there's something about that, the familiar furniture of a Gmail screen, you know, with the addresses down the left, the way the whole thing is laid out, the color scheme.
It just looks like your own inbox.
Your own inbox. And then you're looking at horrific stuff that it's like...
Well, isn't it like people now who are like buying like... a 20-year-old bag of grass or sending cryptic messages on Snapchat where Jeffrey Epstein was writing emails like, hey, want to do some illegal paedophile stuff on a Gmail account?
Yes. Although the most recent one I've just logged into there, the most recent one is from Cody Rudland, August 13, 2019. You are dead, lol, good riddance.
Oh, well done, Cody.
On the Jmail. So anyway, for people who want to flip through it in a more user-friendly way, look at the horror, jmail.com.
And
world, actually.
It has reached, like, the Gardaí have confirmed that they're also looking into allegations that women were brought to Ireland. And it's reached Chapel Roan. Do you know why Chapel Roan is involved in the Epstein files? She, obviously, not in any way connected to Jeffrey Epstein, but she has dropped her agent. She was led by Wasserman Agency. He is currently the 2028 Olympics chief. His name is Casey Wasserman. But he is the man who was emailing Ghislaine Maxwell about sexy leather outfits. He has since apologised for communicating with Maxwell after his emails with Jeffrey Epstein's facilitator were made public. So he was married at the time and he was dating Maxwell in 2003. So when it was announced, more people were talking about the fact that he's in charge of the Olympics and not the fact that he owns a talent agency. But Chapel Roan posted... last week, as of today, I am no longer represented by Wasserman, the talent agency led by Casey Wasserman. Artists deserve representation that aligns with their values and supports their safety and dignity. And this reflects my belief that meaningful change in the industry requires accountability and leadership. So, well done her, I would say. Also, Casey Wasserman not accused of anything illegal, just dating Ghislaine Maxwell and sending sexy emails. No one wants their sexy emails published.
It does,
but you shouldn't be sending sexy emails to someone who's involved in human trafficking.
Yeah, I know. It does.
Not here to kink shame. If you want to send a sexy email, send a sexy email. But make sure the person is not involved in human trafficking before you do it.
Yes. Speaking of Ghislaine, she pled the Fifth Amendment when questioned by, is it Congress or a Texas court?
Ghislaine Maxwell, the convicted associate and former girlfriend of Jeffrey Epstein, refused to answer any questions from the US House Oversight Committee on Monday. She was appearing virtually for a closed-door deposition from a Texas prison where she's serving 20 years for sex trafficking. You can see the video online. She is wearing a very orange is the new black looking prison suit, and she said many times that although she would like to answer your questions, she won't be. And apparently, she wants a pardon.
Looking for a deal.
From Donald Trump before she says anything.
She knows some stuff and he knows.
Do you know what I
knows.
Think as well?
Yeah.
You know what Hitler did for the name Adolf?
Oh, yes.
I think the name Ghislaine might be done.
Yeah. Ghislaine, probably Andrew. A few Jeffreys.
No, Andrew's massive in Scotland. I think Andrew's going to be all right. But I think Ghislaine, it's specific enough. Maybe not in France, but it's specific enough in other places. Like, she's the only Ghislaine, you know, the way Hitler is the only Adolf that you know.
Yeah.
So, sorry to all the Ghislaines out there. But
or they'd start pronouncing the S.
Ghislaine.
Oh, no, it's even worse.
So, the Epstein files, I would like to end on a high note in terms of the story. They're making us feel that nothing can be done. The way they are like drip feeding the information, they'll release, you know, thousands or millions of documents. They let people be shocked and horrified and disgusted, and then you come to terms with it, and then you come to terms with the fact that there's not going to be any prosecutions, and then they'll release more. It's a psychological trick so that like you're not up in arms. And then you think, well, if this was happening here, we would be rioting in the streets. But Americans can't riot in the streets because federal agents will shoot them in the face. They have been shot in the face for filming a protest. They've been shot in the face for being part of a protest. Everything that Trump has done has been like pre-organized. They can't go out and riot because they're afraid of getting shots. They can't go out and riot because they're afraid of being kidnapped off the street. The fact of the matter is, we know what happened. Anyone who has read those Jmail emails, and some of the names are redacted, but a lot of them aren't. And there are people who are Yale professors, Noam Chomsky. It is very clear what happened on that island, and there's not going to be consequences. But good things are still happening. And when you look, I've been looking a lot at America in terms of the ICE protests. There are lawyers working round the clock doing pro bono work. There are people donating money to pay their neighbours rent because they can't go to work because they're afraid of ICE. There are people patrolling kindergartens to make sure that ICE doesn't come in. There are churches giving up their time. I saw a very interesting and heartwarming sex shop in Minneapolis because it doesn't open during the day. So during the day, it's become a food bank.
Okay.
And then they're allowing people to come, and they have like a lawyer there who'll help you do stuff if you need help. And they're doing food banks and clothes swaps and all those things because people can't go to work and they're losing money because they're afraid of ICE kidnapping them.
I just imagine the lawyer going, wait, is there anything that's actually a pen here?
And then the sex shop opens as normal.
Yeah.
And it's like there are evangelical churches that wouldn't do that, but the sex shops are doing it.
Yeah. And the thing about all of this is, and it's the same in any crisis, is that the connections that are forged in really shit times, like that kind of community does outlive, you know, there'll be rows. People will go their separate ways, you know, once the big issue moves away. But those kind of connections do last. You always hear of people who met during the such and such protests. So
The reason we even know who Holly Cairns is because of Rupi. So Holly Cairns talks about how she didn't know anything about politics her entire life and never took an interest. And then she joined Repeal and it opened her eyes to different things. And then she went on to run for the Social Democrats and she was elected by one vote. And now she's the leader of the Social Democrats. So as you say, the ICE thing may end. All these awful things may end, but the community that it forged.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know it can be incredibly tough. The Epstein thing is vile. Every conspiracy theory we were ever told about the elites is coming true. And it's very tough. But there is still good. And I would just say, you know, for the people who still defend billionaires and still think, you know, that we need these people, we don't.
Yeah. Stop eating that boot.
This weekend saw a pop concert with a football game surrounding it. I am told that the Seattle Seahawks beat the New England Patriots 29-13. I don't know if that's a good score. I don't know if that's a normal score. I don't watch the Super Bowl, but I did watch the halftime show. Did you watch the halftime show?
I watched both halftime shows. So I watched them back.
There was two. So there was a pro-Trump halftime show, and then there was Common Decency in the other one.
Well, so, the way some of those young women were dressed in that show, I don't know.
Just enjoy the big booty gals dancing. So, Bad Bunny. Me and you talked about Bad Bunny before, didn't we?
We did. I was unaware of him. Like, and Bad Bunny must be gutted that he hasn't reached my ears. So, from Puerto Rico, is he the biggest streaming...
Spanish language artist,
Biggest Spanish language artist. And did he break streaming records across all things last year?
He's bigger than Taylor Swift.
Like, wow.
Yeah. So, there was loads going on at the Super Bowl. But, like last year, so last year we had Kendrick Lamar, Not Like Us. Remember we talked about that?
That's right.
That?
Yeah. Was that his diss track?
Yes, against...
Drake.
Well done. Yeah. Also,
your man Drake.
Yeah. Anyway, anyone who was at the halftime show, Roger Federer, Adam Sandler, John Bon Jovi, all in the stands, Sofia Vergara. It was a celebration of Puerto Rican, Central American, South American culture and I learned a lot about Puerto Rico and Central America and South America in the days since.
You probably have to watch it, I'd say, a number of times because the amount of things you miss, the Easter eggs.
Yeah, there was loads of different little things that if you're not Puerto Rican or Central American or whatever, you wouldn't pick them up. So there was, you know, a man and woman got married on the stage by Bad Bunny. So she was there in her wedding dress. A lot of it completely in Spanish language.
Yeah. Also, he's not a singer, he's a rapper. So I'd say if you're watching something in another language and it's not like Nessun Dorma, you know, it's not, he's not a tenor.
He's not Pavarotti.
He's rapping in Spanish. Yeah. So it's really one for the visuals.
There was also Green Day. Green Day did American Idiot. God love them. And no one noticed. I mean, it's nice to have like, you know, South American, Central American culture and then just white people culture.
Yeah.
Just to give some to the white people.
A little bit of white bread on the side.
Yeah. So also what happened? Kim Kardashian pictured kissing
Lewis Hamilton.
Well done. Yeah, that's right. Formula One driver. There was a lot going on, but obviously Bad Bunny has been the talking point the way Kendrick was last year. So Kendrick was unapologetically black. Bad Bunny was unapologetically Latino. Ricky Martin was there.
That's right.
King of Latino pop. It was amazing. Go on YouTube and watch it. It is pure joy.
I think it's probably one of those things that the best way to view it is through the lens of the camera that's on it. I'd say from miles up in the stand.
Oh, yeah, it looked chaos.
It just looked like community games.
Yeah.
I wonder where they're bloopers. Like, is it one of the things that
I'd
weren't supposed to happen?
Yeah, because like, even the grass.
Yeah.
The grass moved all as one because there was people just dressed up as grass.
Yes.
All moving. But I'd say a few of them fell over and stuff. It'd be hard to see.
Yeah. For anybody who's unfamiliar with the Super Bowl halftime show, the one that people often remember is Snakey Snake Timberlake.
Pulling out Janet Jackson's boob.
Pulling off her. That was where the phrase wardrobe malfunction originated. So that the phrase wardrobe malfunction is 22 years old. I don't know how long it's been going, actually.
The Super Bowl's first decade, starting in 1967, the halftime show featured a college marching band.
Okay.
Yeah. Starting in the 1990s, to counter Other Network's efforts to counter-program the game, the show was headlined by popular music acts each year, including New Kids on the Block, Michael Jackson, Gloria Estefan, Clint Black, Patti LaBelle, and Tony Bennett. Who? Tony Bennett doing what? Like, Fly Me to the Moon?
Well, you know.
No, I love Tony Bennett, a crooner.
Yes.
But not what I'd be looking for.
Yeah, well, he was much younger then, though.
So, yeah, it was absolutely stunning. Now Colin is going to tell us about why all the white dads were very upset about
it. Plenty of people with no children and mams at the other one. So I watched the other one as well.
Okay, it's Turning Point, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you can find it on YouTube. Turning Point USA.
Which is
founded by Charlie Kirk in 2012. He gave a speech as a probably very young college student and then some wealthy old guy said, that looks like a young feller knows what's what. And
so did the sniper.
Yeah.
Keep that on.
And so he set that up and it's been going for loads of years. It makes $80 million a year.
Turning Point.
And then spends $76 million on the four.
On Erica Kirk's fireworks.
And the spare amount goes to Erica, I'd say. There's a Turning Point UK, which is
apparently isn't as polished. They're coming to the north.
Like, they're not as polished as the USA one. They tend to be like pals with football hooligans and Tommy Robinson and all of that. So it wouldn't be a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Starting the north.
We found out today that Erica Kirk is expected to visit Northern Ireland as part of a tour to recruit young people to Turning Point, the organisation funded by her murdered husband.
But anyway, Turning Point USA, they knew there'd be Spanish people talking at this thing, so they said, let's have a good old American
They did this last year with Kendrick as well.
Oh, did they go opposite Kendrick as well? Okay. This one got more publicity, as in I've heard about it. So the YouTube video is 2 hours long, 40 minutes of which is coming soon. So they obviously got the timing wrong. They had a message from Pete Hegseth, the Minister of Defence.
Department of War,
now, that's right. Currently docking the wage of a multi-starred general who has said that US Army generals should refuse illegal orders, which is what you should do.
That's literally in their code of conduct.
Yeah, Pete Hegseth is trying to take away his pension. So he turned up on it, and then there's dead air for 40 minutes, so you clip through that. And then four singers, what is it, Brantley Gilbert?
That's not a name.
Is it Brantley? Yeah, Brantley Gilbert, Gabby Barrett, Lee Bryce, and Kid Rock.
Oh, I know who Kid Rock is.
Yeah, so I've listened to a few of their songs. Favourite one has to be Lee Bryce's Country Nowadays. It ain't easy being country when the country's like this, is the tagline.
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, because Trump's policies are really hurting the agriculture sector, so I would say being country is quite tough.
Yeah, although he didn't mention soybeans at all in it. No, he just wants to catch his fish, drive his truck, doesn't want to tell his little boy that they can be a little girl, that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. It's tough for them.
Tough, yeah. So that was...
what does Brantley sing?
Brantley, a Real American and Dirt Road Anthem. Now, one of those is about drinking and driving. So, you know, the kind of family values. Can't remember which it is. It could be either one. So, yeah, like, I think it got 20 million streams, apparently. And yeah, it was all in English. So people liked that aspect of it. And it, I don't know what to make of it. Like, oh, Kid Rock miming the fuck out of it.
I heard he doesn't know the words to his own song.
Yeah, it was. And that's despite the fact that the first line of one of the songs is something along the lines of "Bawa taba dang dang ding" and it up the boogie the beat. Like it's basically a bastardization of rapper's
about
delight because he's originally a hip hop artist.
Kid Rock.
He was hip hop and he turned to country in 2009.
Okay, so I've just Wikipedia'd Kid Rock. So he's a supporter of the Republican Party, but he proclaims himself libertarian. He said he's socially liberal on views like abortion and gay marriage, but conservative on economics. Let me see if there's...
He used to have the Confederate flag displayed, but he did get an award from the NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Coloured People, I think. And there was controversy about that. And he didn't renounce the Confederate flag. He just said he likes all flags or something along those lines.
Just really on the flag.
Yeah. But it is since 2020 that he has gone full bore Trump. And see, the thing is, if you were a rocker of a certain age, maybe you're not selling gigs to the same extent, or you're just not in that position as being a totemic figure, and you're going, where is the gap? And the gap is often on the right. And it's the same with columnists.
It's like, you eventually
run out of stuff to say and you go, maybe I'll just give out about travellers.
Yeah, it's the thing in The Simpsons where he was like, is it us? And he's like, no, it's the people who are wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. The best thing Kid Rock ever done was married Pamela Anderson. They got married in 2002 and then they divorced in 2003. She cited irreconcilable differences. He said it was because she criticised his mother in front of his son.
It's so relatable.
Yeah.
So relatable. But anyway,
worth noting that he has used homophobic slurs in the last number of years. He also said F Colin Kaepernick when he protested racism. And he said, if you're anti-gun, you don't get to support 4th of July. You would have never fought back. Enjoy your Pride Month. And then used a word that people use for women's vaginas.
Okay.
Wouldn't be for me now.
No, but again, all of that, I tell you, it's the pandemic has messed up. Like, it's exacerbated.
Some people never got the lid back on.
No.
After the pandemic.
No, but do watch his performance for heroic miming. Like, the mic is nowhere near his face when he's kind of
like Ashley Simpson
about.
In SNL.
Yeah. But look, it's part of the, as lots of people have noted, we can't even have one halftime show. It's part of the cultural divide in the US. I always find that the Super Bowl halftime show is a handy way of, I wonder what's going on in America now.
Yeah.
I'm just keeping up with that.
I have some good news.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. Back to Ireland for the good news.
Yeah.
Oscar-winning actress Brenda Fricker is going to receive the Freedom of Dublin City. What a woman.
Yeah.
So Brenda Fricker, known from, it depends, I think, on your age. Some people know her from Home Alone.
Yeah.
And other people know her from My Left Foot.
Yeah.
In which she won an Oscar. The last time we won an Oscar was Brenda Fricker for My Left Foot. Beep, 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 beep. Jesse Buckley alarm. So Jesse Buckley is now our greatest hope. But...
Sorry, last time we won any Oscar or...
No, the actress Oscar.
Actress Oscar.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the previous winners of the Freedom of Dublin are people like Nelson Mandela, JFK, George Bernard Shaw, U2 and Brian O'Driscoll. But Dublin Lord Mayor Fine Gael's Ray McAdam proposed Brenda Fricker, and it was backed by the Council's Protocol Committee. Ray McAdam said, Brenda Fricker is one of Dublin's most distinguished cultural figures and a source of immense pride that our city is recognising her in this way. It's not about international acclaim, it's about contribution and the pride Brenda has brought to Dublin and Ireland. She won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress in 1990 for playing Daniel Day-Lewis's mother as Christy Brown in My Left Foot. And then she was also... Oh, yes. She played Veronica Guerin's mammy in Veronica Guerin.
Yeah.
And she was also in A Time to Kill, in which she played Matthew McConaughey's secretary slash mother figure.
And she has a memoir out, which apparently is brilliant. Well worth.
She used to have around the corner from me in the Liberties.
Somebody talked about calling in to do an interview with her, and it's like small little house in the Liberties.
But it's
like,
actually three cottages, I think, that she's like knocked through.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Oscar is just up on the shelf. Like, it's not, you know, it's...
This has become like a Dublin legend because I heard she used it as a doorstopper.
She should put it in the window, like the... What's the statues they put in all the windows that talking about?
Oh, the White Lady.
White Lady, yeah. One of the great things about Brenda Fricker is bluntness. And I hope that, like, that if there is a ceremony, that she just brings full Brenda Fricker, don't give a shit energy. What is it? She was talking about Daniel Day-Lewis and his method acting. And she was like, I don't mind his method acting. Just stop fucking method acting over here. In front of me. More, I'm paraphrasing her now, but she has that kind of Miriam Margolyes grumpiness, which
she
is rare.
Me of Nell.
Yeah.
She reminds me of Nell McCafferty.
Ah, yeah. And you were reminded of Nell last Friday.
Yeah. So I was getting ready to go out with the gowns, and I made a Instagram or a TikTok about how women in the 1970s weren't allowed to drink pints. They could get served 2 half pints, but that was more expensive. And it was actually inspired by a protest by dairyman Eamon McCann, and Nell went down to Neary's with 30-odd women.
They ordered well odd, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. And they ordered 30 brandies, drank 30 brandies, and Nell said, can I get a pint of Guinness? And he says, no, we don't serve pints to women. And she stood up on the table and she said, this is a protest by, you know, I can't remember what it's called, the Women's Chemical Coalition or whatever. And she was like, support us in this. And then there was photographs taken of them outside and stuff. I think obviously Nell had phoned the press. To say she was going to do this, and then it caused obviously such bad publicity around Dublin and Ireland that there was no actual law saying the bars couldn't serve them pints. They just wouldn't, because it was seen as unladylike. And then basically that was the start of a fizzling out. Loads of people have pointed out that loads of pubs refused, even up until like the 80s and 90s, to serve women pints. And even when I started drinking pints in Derry when I was maybe like 17, my mama used to say to me, she's like, oh, Aoife, would you not get a half pint glass?
Is it common, is it?
Or it's like, it's seen as unladylike.
Yeah. Do you have much dealings with Nell McCafferty in your
time? Yeah, I first met Nell when I was 13. So Nell's sister, Carmel, is quite famous in our hometown. She's an actress and she taught drama. So I met Nell through Carmel when I was like 13. And my nickname was Grounded, because I was always grounded for drinking or smoking or ditching school or whatever. And
Not for your investigative journalism?
No.
Oh, okay.
And the first time I met Nell, Carmel said that this is grounded, and she says, why do you call you grounded? And I was telling her the story of, like, I was like, oh, I'm always grounded. And she was like, why? And I was like, oh, I hate being told what to do. And I explained all the times that I've been grounded, and like, I was, you used to call it Mitchin, but we would have called it Dobbin.
On the hop.
On the hop, Cork. Yeah. So anyway, she says to me, she was like, oh, you're pure trouble, we hear. And she was like, don't be worrying, I was pure trouble too.
Yeah.
And then I found out years later that Carmel told me, she was like, Nell wasn't. She was like, Nell was actually really quiet and really well behaved at school. And it was only as she got older, probably puberty and whatever else,
yeah,
turned into the Nell we know now.
I interviewed Nell McCafferty for student radio in 1997. I can't remember what the interview was about.
She cut you in half?
No, I figured not to assume too much.
Yeah.
But she did sign off as, so I went like, Nell McCafferty, thanks very much. I said, goodbye now, young column. That's all I remember from her. Good.
That is us for this week's A Few Scoops. And we have some news.
We do. I'm pregnant. No.
I am most definitely not. This is going to be our last episode of A Few Scoops for a while. It is not goodbye forever, but we are going to take a break. So me and Callum had a conversation where we both felt that as much as we loved the podcast, we both were not able to dedicate as much time and research that we wanted to. We started this podcast because we wanted people to get news that didn't make them despair, but kept them informed. And as the news went on and things became more complicated, I didn't feel like I could properly give the in-depth research.
Yeah. The headlines are grim, and the hope bit requires so much more research.
So we're both working on separate projects. We are going to wrap it up for a while.
Like, it's an important job to do this well and do it, spend the right amount of time at it. And when we've got, this is my 8th job. I have lots of other, I have a new book coming out in the autumn, working on a new show, and you just get dragged in so many directions. Now, ordinarily, I would just attempt to do everything badly. But, you know, you're trying to tell people the news, and there's more responsibility than just saying, you know, Lines to your Barry's tea. Like, it's...
Yeah, I picked this podcast and I picked a column, and the reason I want to do it is because I love the news and the news is so important to me. And I just didn't feel like I was able to dedicate the time to give people the in-depth detail that I think some of these stories require. So we're leaving it for now.
Yeah, but just I wanted to say, in terms of like good news stuff, I've often mentioned it, I subscribe to Fix the News. And they will send you stories that have nothing to do with Ireland or your life, but they just tell you the world isn't as bad as you thought it was. There's stuff happening away from the bad news cycle. Also, I subscribe to a woman called Hannah Ritchie, she's from Our World in Data. So any given story, she will look into the full data behind it.
Mm.
She will have news stories like, you know, you can make a lot of electricity on the land used for biofuels. Sounds boring, but that's the kind of stuff that stops me despairing about energy. She'll have stuff about life expectancy is rising in surprising places.
Mm-hmm.
They're not cutting down as many trees as you thought in the Amazon. Those kind of things. I don't know. I search for places where it tells me things are not as bad as I thought they were. And that is a win in a grim news cycle. The other thing I do, you know, we all support various charities or GoFundMes and all that. One thing I do is Right to Know. So they're the people who do all the freedom of information requests, because that costs money and time.
Ken Fox.
Is that just one guy, isn't it?
Ken Fox, yeah.
So subscribing to that, even though I was once the subject of a freedom of information request. Well, if it isn't the consequences of my own actions. But still, like that kind of like transparency, that's the nuts and bolts of
democracy.
Yeah, definitely
follow Ken Fox if you're more interested in like how things work when it comes to freedom of information. He is a one-man band. He's a freelance journalist and he's worked at loads of different outlets. And he has a website called Right to Know, and he explains how you can do freedom of information and explains how it's changed over the years. So things like government overspend on things like the bike shed or the shelter, that was Ken Fox.
Yeah.
Ken Fox will be able to tell you the expenses that were spent when politicians go overseas to America for St. Patrick's Day. He basically digs up everything that the government doesn't want you to see.
Oh, the Dublin Inquirer. Just wanted to do a quick shout out to them. Local paper that it's like a fiver a month. And they go to council meetings and report on the stuff that is being discussed there. And that's not everybody's bag, but they go and do it in a place where journalism, and as you probably know, like so much stuff is just clickbait or their money isn't there for proper investigative journalism.
Mm-hmm.
That's a place that's doing it. So, yeah, happy to help them.
Yeah, and the only thing I would advise, and I tell everyone this, is please vary the type of news that you're taking in. So I will read news from about 10 or 15 different websites, because every news outlet has a different owner and a different belief system and a different editorial style. So people give off about RTE and BBC's coverage of Gaza, and I absolutely agree. But then you can read the BBC and you can read RTE for certain things, and then you can go to Al Jazeera to read about Gaza. You can read Haaretz if you want to learn about Gaza. Same with crime. I think some of the best crime work that gets done is from, you know, the Irish Daily Star, which most people look down on as a newspaper, but they do the best in-depth crime stuff. I think, you know, when it comes to America, NPR in America is very good if you want to get the lowdown on Trump without bombarding yourself with information. The New York Times, the Daily podcast. I mean, people have very, very strong views on the New York Times, and I share some of them as well. But I just would ask people to get a variation. You're not going to get everything from one place. You're not going to get everything from RTE, but you're not going to get it from the Endo Wheeler. And I think learning how to read between the lines is a big thing when it comes to the ingestion of news.
And something that has been my guiding star for the last few years is that famous Onion headline, "Heartbreak as biggest asshole you know has a good point." Sometimes the people don't like, people you don't like make good points.
This has been a real labour of love for me and Colm. We've absolutely loved it. And bear in mind, me and Colm didn't know each other before we started this. So me, Colm and Siobhan have been here week in, week out doing this, and we've really loved it. And we really...
And on our holidays.
And we really do appreciate all the support and lovely messages and reader good news and everything we've received. We've done two live shows and went to Electric Picnic and we went to All Together Now and we had an absolute ball. So we are sad to be leaving, but it's not goodbye forever.
Yeah.
So
when we lose all our other work, we'll be back. Well, who is it came through the door with their microphones?
So no chaser this week, and we will hopefully see you soon, and thank you so much.
Yeah. Abby's no homes to go to, last orders. Bye-bye.